This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a little too loud. It was a little bit too loud.
This is bananas. I'm so glad you guys didn't go to the marches and came here instead. Thank you.
Hey, it's pretty cool that we decided to do our live, first huge live LA show the same day that the revolution started. Am I right? Yeah.
Like, wait, where the fuck am
Yeah, get
I?
Wake up, Dad.
See you.
It started.
Fucking see you.
Madonna said fuck on CNN. What? It started. You know, that's been the cue that we've all been waiting for this whole time.
Man.
That's my Madonna. That's the Madonna I remember.
Oh, what if like the actual Madonna, like the Jesus's mommy Madonna was like, fuck.
Fuck
like,
you.
Yeah, dude.
Whoops.
That sucks. That's Karen, and that's Georgia.
Hi. And we're My Favorite Murder. That's stupid. Let's never do that again.
Well, we never introduce ourselves.
I know, we never say we're My Favorite Murder. That's super lame.
Okay, I'm gonna fall. Like, there's a weird. Let's move this on.
Let's go ahead and just take 5 minutes to make this our own
space. So thank you guys so much.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
All right, here we go. Let's do a... Okay.
I guess...
Tell me.
I guess of all the signs I saw today, the one I saw that I love the best was the one with a picture of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Did you see that one?
No.
Where it was like... All you fives better listen when a 10 is talking.
Oh!
Yeah.
God.
That's right.
Fuck, dude.
There's a new rating system, and I couldn't be happier.
Holy shit. There were a lot of good signs today. I think one of being, like, a guy was holding up a sign that was just like, I have nothing to say because I'm sick of hearing men talk.
Oh, come on. So many tweets and responses.
Call and response, but
so
it's
many things.
Oh, how you
man,
feeling, Karen?
I don't.
Let's get deep.
Okay, look. Here's the truth. This is the dress I wore to the New York live show. Some of you may recognize it.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I have to tell on myself.
I pay attention to myself. Oh. I actually might have worn this to something, and I just don't remember.
Well, why don't you stand up and let's take a look at it.
No.
Do a walk. Let's both do
no,
a walk.
No,
it's
no,
fun.
No.
Just walk it out.
No.
Oh yeah, I will. Because look. Look.
Okay.
The only reason I'm doing this is because if my sister saw the shoes I was wearing with this dress, she would be so livid at me. She's always like, take the time. Buy a $250 shoe. You
no!
deserve it.
What the fuck is wrong with it? Let's like onesie twosies pass
okay.
each other. One, two, three, four. Dee, do, do. My sister's actually.
Better fives better time. Listen when these tens are talking. And by that I mean the size of my shoe. That's right. I bought a size too big at Target because they didn't have nines.
I mean, sometimes you just gotta... My feet are broken because when I was younger, I was like, size 6 looks cuter than size 7.
Ooh, I know. So that's downright ancient Chinese of you.
Yeah. Yeah. My actual real-life sister is here.
Let's get a spotlight
on
her.
She threw a Barbie at my head.
That's right.
Lee, you mother... No,
Lee. Hey. She made you who you are today.
She did. A broken human being. No. Lee, I love you. You're the best. Here we go. Let's do, you're the best kid I've ever met in my life.
Well, I do have a present for you.
Good way. You can't keep sneaking presents at me.
I certainly can. This one is the best because if the last episode we talked about, I talked about going to see Golden Girls Live, which is the best show ever.
Yes.
That's right. Let's cheer for everything. Casitas, Del Campo, Drew Joji, Jackie Beat, Sherry Vine, Sam Pancake.
Casitas, Del Campo, everyone after the party, go there.
Yeah, it'll be the after party. They're closed. We'll stand around in the parking lot. But, so I told Georgia that at the end of the last podcast, and then she told me about the mug they make. And it is a mug that has the cast of the Golden Girls Live on it. So it's all those guys dressed up like their characters in the Golden Girls. And on the other side of the mug, one side is that picture, and the other side, it says, "Thank you for being a cunt." And...
You did not.
Well, here's the thing. So... Georgia was like, she told me about that mug, but I had already bought her the mug at that live show, but then had second thoughts because I was like, wait, is she going to think I'm passively aggressively calling her a cunt? Like, oh, here, thanks for being a cunt.
No, I don't think that deeply. I'm
okay,
just
good,
like,
then here. Thanks for being a cunt. Yes.
What if I just went, smashed it?
Oh my God. It's anarchy tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
I am a cunt and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, me too. It's fun.
Oh, how do you feel about people who bring their babies to protests?
I don't give a shit anything. Right. The world is about to blow up. You can fucking bring a dead body to a protest. Just show up. Show up.
Love it. Love it.
Sorry, that was a strong reaction.
I
haven't had any protein in a couple hours. I'm about to go off.
I'm doing this.
Yeah, girl.
And it might have dust in it.
No, because I actually, in thinking I shouldn't give it to you, I ran it through the washing machine. The dishwasher.
Oh, God. Really? That's so thoughtful. Oh, because you were going to keep it.
I was going to keep it.
Great. Thank you.
I was going to keep it and then imagine my chills when you were like, they have this mug? And I was like, what?
A fake what?
It was.
Oh, that sounds so weird. Well, thank you. That's so kind of you.
You're welcome.
Karen was like, let's bring signs out. And I was like, what kind of signs? And then like, we have this giant Elvis head that we were given at the Chicago thing.
That's
Jay Graves, what's up? And I thought we should say...
You be quiet.
I was like, what if we write, keep your hands off my cookies? Because that would be funny. But I didn't do it. Because I needed a nap.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, some people are dedicated and they craft and they glue and glitter. And then some people gotta sleep.
Some people tell a friend who's having a meetup before they go to the protest. Some people tell them that they're going to show up and they can't go to the protest because of anxiety, but they'll drive everyone to the train station. And then some people can't wake up before 7:30 and then don't do that and then just promise they'll take them to lunch next week.
How many people were involved in this?
Not me.
Because were you all of them in that one?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So I'm going to lunch alone next week. It's going to be great.
Should we start?
Sure.
It feels like we should. Don't you feel like listening to a couple? Don't you feel like listening to a couple stories of...
Thank all of you for being a friend.
Right. That's for sure.
Who's...
Travel down the road and back again?
No, who's next? Who's first?
Oh. Is
Karen?
It me?
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
Right, here we go. Hey, oh, I gotta chill the fuck out.
Guys, I mean, seriously.
Refuse. What?
Don't care. My ship's here. I've got to go. Oh, well. Ahoy. Okay. So I decided because we're downtown and it's such a rich and storied past that this city has, and we're in it, we're sitting in it right now, that I would do an old downtown, old-timey murder.
Yes.
And, right? Why not? So I decided to do the murder of the L.A. Ripper. Ever heard of that guy?
No! They're all his grandchildren.
Yeah, they're like, how dare you speak of my grandpappy that way. Okay.
We gotta tell me everything.
Okay. This was a guy named Otto Wilson. He was born in Shelbyville, Indiana. Graduated from high school in 1930. He moved to Indianapolis. He served in the Navy in 1941. And then he was given a medical discharge after his wife complained to the San Diego Naval Authorities about his unnatural impulses.
Oh, that's all it takes. He wants to touch my butt.
Yeah.
Like, don't touch your butt.
But what does he want to touch her butt with that makes it feel so unnatural?
Like children. Am I wrong?
Stop it. Don't. Well, it turns out that before she left him, ultimately, and I guess after she made that complaint, he had cut her butt with a razor.
I wasn't wrong.
You were right.
No, it's kind of wrong.
No, you're right.
Her butt.
Your razors and children are very similar.
They both fucking, I don't know.
So there is a quote in this article I stole. It was straight up like cut and paste plagiarism from two things that I then forgot to take the actual names of the people who wrote these articles.
And that's my favorite murder.
So there's some very flowery language that is not my own. I'll find it and say it later with an apology, and it'll be boring. But this was one of the sentences that I love that I cut and paste onto here. In the orphanage, in the Navy, in his last months of drifting, women had always subtly domineered over him.
I'm sorry, but like, fucking let it happen, bro. What's the problem with that?
Get into being domineered over.
We know our shit. Chill the fuck out, you know?
I mean, it's kind of hot to be domineered over sometimes.
He probably sucked at fucking. And the chick was like, can you touch me in my, like, normal area? And he was like, domineering.
Like, nope. Undo the razor. Turn around.
Anyway. Yeah. Fuck you, man.
It all kind of... he was on a bender. His wife left him. Things were bad for several years. November 15th, 1944, he had been on a 2-day bender at that point. And at some point in that time, he had bought himself a butcher knife.
Oh, no.
Fun. So what did he just go into, like, Macy's or something? Kind of drunk. You know how you do with hot dogs at Pink's, but with a butcher knife?
You don't even need a license anymore to get a butcher knife.
That's right. You know just fucking get them willy-nilly. Yeah,
you can fucking register for one at a wedding.
We've both done that.
That's right. So he was at a bar, and he met a woman named Virginia Lee Griffin. It was on Main Street. Yes, dangerously close
right
to where we are now, but quite a long time ago. She told him her name was Virgie, and she's described as a big young woman with lipstick smeared too heavily on her lips.
Oh, fucking assholes.
I mean, sounds familiar, though. I'm into it. Hey, hi. She was married, but her husband was away, and she liked a good time. Who doesn't? So they drank together, and then they decided to go somewhere more private. And he very gallantly held her arm as they crossed the street in the rain.
This, like this, not like sweetly.
All nails.
Yeah.
He has really weirdly long nails.
Oh.
What if it's the guy from the Guinness Book of World Records with the longest nails ever? And he is like, do you want to go somewhere more private?
No.
I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Here we go.
So they went to the old Barclay Hotel, which I, at that time, I think was relatively new.
It wasn't called that.
I hate to shit on someone else's writing that I'm stealing, but I think it was pretty new back then. So apparently they say that she was overheard as saying when she walked in, and this is the way it's written, so I'm going to do a little voice for it.
Please.
If you don't mind.
Always don't mind.
Here's the quote. And don't clap or then I won't want to do it. Don't you know me yet? So she looked up unsteadily as they walked into the hotel, and she said, I got my horoscope told. Wednesday's my lucky day.
Oh, honey, Virgie. Also, I'm going to get moited today. Am I wrong?
I mean, no, I think you're dead on. And that's how you know that astrology isn't real.
I mean,
because if this doesn't prove it, I don't know what else you need. So they registered as Mr. and Mrs. O.S. Wilson of Steubenville, Indiana.
I bet.
And after they'd been in the room, they had a couple drinks from a bottle of whiskey he brought.
Ugh.
She demanded more money from him. So the funny part at that point is that they hadn't really mentioned that she had gotten money before that. So she was a sex worker.
Hey.
Or a married lady that liked to have fun. Maybe that's the way they said it back then.
Like, fair enough, dude.
I mean, whatever.
Get yours.
So what he said to the cops was, somehow I got sore. I socked her, and then I cut her.
Oy.
I was going to dismember her body and get rid of it, but I found that I couldn't do it, so I left.
Oh, what a gentleman.
What
a fucking asshole.
I got sore. I socked her. I mean, that's how you know it's not from now.
So he...
LOL.
So he punched her in the face so hard that he killed her, right?
No, what?
No, you what? Go.
I wasn't listening.
Now that's a better story. No.
Okay.
No, he was mad that she was, like, basically being kind of greedy and like, And what he would do was strangle them, and they would, like, pass out, and then he would cut them and kill them.
I remember. I get that.
So when he left the hotel room, he gave the maid $1, and he told her not to disturb his wife. And then later on, of course, they found the body, and it was sprawled on the bed, and she had been slashed. Her body had been slashed open from her throat to her vagina, and her entrails were pulled out.
Ew!
It gets worse if you want to try to really orchestrate the reactions and kind of tighten it up and get it all together.
There's no orchestra.
Her breasts had been cut off, and an arm and a leg. They were partly severed, and the murder weapon, a razor-sharp carving knife, lay near the body.
Fuck. Man, that guy was like halfway through, and he's like, I can't fucking do
it. He's like, I can't do it anymore. I'm tired.
How many times have we said, leave the eyes and the boobies alone?
They won't listen. He leaves the hotel after that fucking carnage, and he goes to the Million Dollar Theater to see Boris Karloff in The Walking Dead. I don't know. It's just fun to make some references.
I don't know why I'm pointing at everyone.
Yeah, just, you know, you love that movie and place and thing.
Fucking sickos.
So when the movie was done, he went to another bar. And he went and met a woman named Lillian Johnson. And he took her to the Joyce Hotel, where they registered as Mr. and Mrs. O.S. Watson. Same
Stop
day.
Stop it. What
Same
an
day.
Idiot, though.
So he realized it was the same situation where he gets into the room and then he told the cops, like, I don't know, I just got mad. I just got mad and I hit her. But of course she was found in the exact same condition that Virgie was found in. He beat her up and then he realized that he had left his knife at the other hotel.
My God.
So he,
whoopsies,
he shaved and she was like, unconscious on the floor. He shaves and then he takes the, straight razor that he just used to shave and kills her and starts to cut her up.
No.
Then on the way out of this hotel, he stops by the desk clerk and says, "My wife is sleeping. Please don't disturb her."
Code for, "I just murdered this chick I just met.
So witnesses from both hotels gave the cops similar descriptions. They took that information. They created a dragnet all around where we are right now. And one cop is in a bar and he sees a man matching Otto's description, in a booth in deep conversation with a brunette in a tight red dress.
Oh, honey.
So run. he was going to do it again.
Dude.
He had lit his cigarette with a matchbook and the matchbook said, "The Barclay Hotel," and his hands had blood on them.
The cop
was like, "Excuse me, I'd love to speak with you for a second.
Give it a week. Like, chill."
He can't.
Jesus.
He simply has no chill.
Okay.
So they bring him in. He immediately confesses to both killings. He admits his compulsion toward bloodlust. And he told the police that his first wife left him because he would creep up on her when she was naked and slash at her buttocks with a razor.
What the fucking fuck?
I mean,
that's not cool. Like, one time, you're like, goodbye. Like, what the fuck?
Well, one time, you're like, was that a mistake? Tell me now if it was a mistake.
Listen, anytime you need stitches because of your fucking husband, it's time to get the fuck out of there.
Am I wrong?
Unless. But here's the super gross part. He told the cops that his favorite pastime was kissing and licking the blood away while he apologized for his odd behavior. There's so many other pastimes. Like, there's sailboarding and...
Yeah. You know how great, like, naps are?
Yeah, naps, raccoons.
Anything.
look up like, raccoons in the encyclopedia.
Raccoons are, like, amazing
they
animals.
They wash their own food with their little hands.
Oh, my God. YouTube videos of ravens talking.
No, they can talk.
They talk better than parrots.
Yes. It's crazy. And nobody talks about it. No one knows.
Everyone here is like, "Why don't you know?" Like, it's true.
It is so true. Anyhow, look, I'm going to wrap it up by saying that... Dr. Victor Parkin, the defense psychiatrist and a member of the Los Angeles Lunacy Commission.
Oh, that's a thing. That's going to be a thing again. And
we got to bring it back, you guys. That's the next march. This man testified that that Otto was in a semi-automatic state and he had no feeling.
An automatic state.
Oh, come on. Way up top on that one.
Oh,
so fast.
No.
So fast.
So terrible.
Though.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
He was in a dreamlike state. He didn't realize he was butchering a fellow human. I disagree.
Poor baby.
Basically, they said he was crazy. And so then Otto Steve Wilson. I didn't notice that before. Otto Steve Wilson was executed in the gas chamber of San Quentin in prison in September of 1946.
Now it says right here, but his son, Otto Steve Ray Morris Jr.
Oh, my God.
Is still alive today. Fuck.
I noticed that Stephen would often scrape up against my butt with sharp things. Enough of that.
Okay, that was awesome.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Guys, I didn't write it. I just read it and interpreted it. Thank you.
Okay, mine is also vintage.
Nice.
Because there's a lot of sad crimes today, but not a lot of cool ones, man.
Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of shitty shit. All right.
So,
excuse me. That wasn't real. Okay.
Do you want some Diet Coke?
No, thank you. Greystone Mansion. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? Also known as the Doheny Murders.
Am I
Four
wrong?
People. I'm not wrong.
This you just really... said Doheny Mansion, am I wrong?
Never.
Because three people were like, yes.
Yes.
And I was asking them, am I wrong?
No, you're never wrong.
So the Greystone Mansion is a 55-room mansion in Beverly Hills. It's built in 1928. At the time, it cost over $4 million to build and was the most expensive home in California.
Whoa.
And it was also known as the Doheny Mansion because it was a gift from the oil tycoon Edward Doheny to his fucking kind of shitty son, Ned.
What's Ned? Why are you attacking Ned?
Like, Ned, all right, Ned might not be shitty, but
okay,
you know what I'm saying.
If he's a Doheny, let's not be rude to Ned. He'll end us.
Ned is a... here we go.
Oh. This is about Ned?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I spoke too soon. I'm sorry.
You don't know. So Edward Doheny, the older dude, comes from a poor Irish immigrant background.
Do not point at me.
No, I was like... Remember that?
It was only two generations ago.
You did that.
I did it.
Okay, so in Edward's late, like in the late 30s, which gives me hope with my life, he was super poor, and then he like becomes a California oil tycoon. He drills.
You can do it.
I could fucking do that.
Yes.
Right?
Like, there's oil everywhere. You can find it.
Get in there.
Yeah.
So he, you know, on like La Cienega, when you're on your way to the airport, and there are those like old dinosaurs,
yep.
Like oil
sure
things.
Do.
Like he's the guy who fucking found those.
Oh, the LA Confidential
yes.
ones.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And like the tar pits. Like that's all him did.
He made tar pits.
He fucking made the tar pit.
He sunk those dinosaur bones in there.
Huh. So he becomes the first successful oil well guy, and like There Will Be Blood is like, that's basically him.
Okay.
And he makes a fucking fortune. And then he eventually owns one of the largest oil companies in the world, and this is the 1920s, where everything was cool. So his son, Ned, is living off the money and like, you know, pretending to be a businessman. And then in 1913, I think he's in his late teens, early 20s, he meets a man named Hugh Plunkett. And don't fucking lie. And then at the time, Hugh is working at a gas station near the house owned by like friends. And Hugh and Ned become good friends. And Hugh starts working for the Doheny family and eventually becomes Ned's personal secretary.
Uh-huh.
And he travels with him on business and they're like fucking tight as shit.
Okay. No, I get it. Listen. Ned rolled up to the gas station one day. He's like, see
hey,
that
bro.
Gas? That's yeah. My dad made that.
Wash my windows. according to a family friend, their relationship was more than that of friends. And another said that they were like brothers.
Mm-hmm. Brothers that made out all the time.
Fair enough. So in November 1921, the two of them check into a suite in this fucking place, and then Ned takes out $100,000, which is about $10 million in today's money, which I fucking love hearing the... Oh, everyone gasped.
People love money.
$10 million. Like, that's... Like,
it's a lot.
We could retire for 5 years off of that. Okay, so Ned takes it out of his bank account, and then he and Hugh go to D.C. They meet with this dude who's the Secretary of the Interior for the Harding Administration, and then Albert Fall, this dude Albert Fall is a friend of the older dude Doheny, and they hand him the money, and in return, Fall gives them a promissory note, and then I slept through history, literally, and fucking was on drugs. Okay, so
basically, there's some kind of an oily business deal going down.
You guys remember the words teapot dome scandal? This is it. I don't fucking know. Okay, something happens that Fall gives Doheny a bunch of shit and a bunch of oil stuff and in exchange for the $100, so it's like super shady and shit. And then, so Albert Fall is eventually charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States as part of the Teapot Dome scandal.
That's not a problem anymore, apparently.
No. Give everyone money and go fuck yourself.
The hearing, Ned. So Ned, the son, has to testify against his pops, and he says that, you know, he's like, no, we didn't do anything wrong. And Ned and Hugh, his fucking
boyfriend.
They're implicated, and so at the end, the dad gets acquitted, kind of, and so as Ned's loyalty, he builds him the Greystone Manor.
Okay. Shit. All right. I forgot about
Remember that.
Remember
that?
We're back in at the Greystone Manor.
Remember that biggest house you've ever heard of in your life?
Can I just tell you really
Please.
Quick?
Yes.
I went and saw a play done in the Greystone Manor.
No, you didn't.
Yes, where you walk around, the play is
you
happening.
You went to the Greystone Manor?
Yeah, because they do a thing. I think maybe it's for Christmas or something, but you walk around like you're at this party and then the actors are around you. I hate shit like that so much. I think it's so embarrassing to be that
Hello.
Close to like an actor.
Hello,
like,
my lady.
Oh, like, I have a vest on. I was like, oh,
yourself.
Don't look at me. But anyway, yeah, but the house itself was lovely.
That's amazing. No, that's fucking awesome.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Then Karen Kilgariff was there.
Yes,
that's
finally.
Part of it. okay, so Hugh starts going fucking crazy at this point because he's like, I'm just like a poor dude and I have to fucking testify against maybe my lover and his pops and blah, 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 blah. Okay, so on February 16th, 1929, Hugh, this is the gas station dude. He lets himself into the main house because he had a key and he used to hang out in this like room, like it was his bedroom sometimes. I'm going to belch really soon.
Do it.
Okay. So Ned and Hugh, they meet in this guest bedroom and Hugh's flipping the fuck out, apparently. And then around 11 o'clock, Lucy, the wife of Ned, who's like a fucking staunch Catholic, hears a shot while she's in the living room reading magazines. And who does she call to be like, I heard a shot. The police?
No.
Nope.
They
the
never
doctor,
do.
The family doctor.
Oh.
Who are you going to say? Batman.
No. No, I just say rich Not, people never call the cops.
No, yeah. Call the fucking doctor.
Call your lawyer. You call your
anyone.
And there's so many people.
The thing is, help me.
An uncle. I'm not going to name people, sorry.
So he arrived. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so the doctor says to the cops that he hears Hugh yelling at them from this like place not to come into the room. And there's the second shot. And when the doctor goes in, he finds both men. And their whole story is that Ned had been shot by Hugh and Hugh had shot himself, like a murder-suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote, suspicious shit. I really, it's right there. Okay, here's some suspicious shit. Ned's gun, the fucking Doheny dude's gun, was the murder weapon. Super weird, right? And before the police were called, the bodies had been moved from their original position. And the police weren't called until 2 a.m.
Hmm.
So the first shot is at 11 p.m. and the fucking cops are called at 2 a.m. Da, da, da.
So they were moving stuff around. They were.
Well, yeah, the fucking bodies were moved.
Yeah.
And the detective, and so what it looked like is that Ned was shot by Doheny in the head, and then Doheny, who had a lit cigarette in his hand, had like landed on the gun after killing himself. Suspicious shit, right?
Okay, yeah.
But there were powder burns on the hole in Doheny's head, which means the gun had been less than 3 inches away from his head when he killed himself. Which usually points to suicide, and there was no powder burns on Hugh, which every fucking person here is ever watching a fucking Discovery ID thing knows that, like, you check for powder burns.
Yeah.
And that's who shoots the fucking gun. There weren't any. Okay, but within hours, the DA's office holds a press conference and, like, no, this is a murder-suicide, and, like, this poor person killed this rich person, and, like, close the fucking case, no autopsies, nothing, which is, like, you're in charge of the media at that point. Okay, so here are some theories. One was that it was a murder-suicide, but that Ned and Hugh had been together, that Ned and Hugh had been called to testify on the bribery trials, but that Ned had been assured immunity and Hugh had not, and he felt betrayed, which is true. Ned was assured immunity against his father. He was not. They were throwing him under the bus.
Yeah, they were going to make the poor guy take the fall.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck this dude. For Albert Fall, which
right.
is like,
oh yeah.
The other was that Ned and Hugh were lovers, okay, and that they had a fight, and that Lucy caught them, the wife of Ned caught them and killed them herself, which is why she didn't call the cops immediately. And what supports either that they were lover stories and that they killed each other in a lover's quarrel is that they were both buried in Forest Lawn, which is a secular cemetery, but the Doheny family were devout Catholics. And you can't bury someone in a Catholic cemetery if they killed themselves.
Am I wrong? Yeah, that's right. Because suicide is a, what do you call it, number one sin. Cardinal, venial.
Here we go.
Catholicness. Who went there?
Baruch Atah. Okay, so. Okay, or that they were lovers and everyone knew it. And so they were buried, like, within a few feet of each other in this secular fucking place. All right. Okay, and so they were buried together and close by, and so no one really knows why they killed each other or who killed who and why, but it seems very suspicious. And also, because of the sympathy that they had for Doheny having his son being killed, his investigation was basically called off, which makes everyone think that maybe the senior Doheny fucking killed both of them.
Oh, whoa.
To get them to shut the fuck up.
Because he was getting off?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because he got off because of his kid getting murdered.
So basically anybody in that family could have murdered them.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And Christmas was fun, I bet, at their house.
Okay. So now it's a city park now, and so everyone lets me there tomorrow. You can go there now and just have tours and just chill and have a fucking picnic.
It's pretty it's an amazing house.
It's supposedly
pretty cool.
Beautiful, but it's also supposed to be haunted.
I hope so.
Yeah.
If all that happened.
Dude. Yeah.
All right, nice one.
Hey,
look, those are our murders. Thanks.
Was that it? Are we done?
Well, we now have some special guests to bring out because, as you know, yes, it's very exciting. This is the portion of our show that we normally do hometown murders, and so we thought it would be fun to have our two friends, our brother podcast, you might want to say, from The Dollop, Dave Anthony and Gary Reynolds.
Get over there, you get over there.
Hi.
Did you care where you were going?
Why don't you surround us?
Okay. Yeah, that's
you
nice.
You get that, and you get that.
Really take the stage.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Ned and who's the other guy?
What? Oh, Hugh.
They were totally fucking because someone came in and saw him fucking, and then
they weren't fucking. They weren't
killed
him,
and then they put their clothes on and moved him around.
Yes,
you forgot about that. They moved him around. They put their clothes on.
The after murder dress.
Yeah. Why else would you be moving them around?
No, for sure.
Yeah.
All of it. I didn't want to say that because I'm not a fucking.
Yeah.
They were totally getting it on.
Okay, you've been clear.
We all have theories, Dave.
Oh yeah.
We heard you guys have hometown murders.
I don't have a hometown murder. So what? Last time I was on, I did my hometown murder.
Yeah.
So there's a murder that everybody who listens to The Dollop has always been like, you have to do this one. And I'm like, we don't do murders.
In a couple ways.
What do you mean?
We don't murder people and we don't cover them.
Oh,
nice.
We've actually started murdering people.
Oh, that's news.
Well, I'll bring you in on it.
Thank you.
You guys You'll need to have there. A team meeting.
We should have a meeting.
It's been too long, turns out. We're not communicating well.
I've been killing our fans.
Okay, well, we should catch up more often, I think.
You know how you keep losing one fan a week?
Yeah.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Craft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Goodbye. Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time. And we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager, and companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information, so you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1, as in the number 1, password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
Here's the murder. Okay, so I'm going to tell you guys. So my uncle...
Oh, wait, Dave, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Hi, I'm Dave.
I just remembered something.
That I used to slash your buttocks when we dated.
Oh, that's the scars.
How dare you speak of our secrets this way? At the Orpheum.
Yeah.
Know that you guys did... That we did the Tylenol murders.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then we did the Bhagwan Shree Rajneesh, which I didn't know that you guys had just
done.
Yes,
yeah.
They did it.
Yeah.
We did it at the same time.
Don't fucking write our coattails, man.
No.
Whoa.
We put out the Tylenol like within hours of each other, right?
Yes.
So, but you guys did it from the murder perspective, and we did it from the like.
Fun perspective.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
the commercial tie-in. It was a branded episode for us.
Oh, you guys got sponsored? That's cool.
A lot
cool.
of free Tylenol out of that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. They're big players, too.
Lucky.
We got a lot of swag.
They're a very popular company.
What kind of swag does Tylenol put
out? Oh, my God. The list goes on and on. They give you free Tylenol.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just never
the gel,
ends.
The gel.
It never ends.
The gel caps?
Oh, yeah. Gel caps and the other ones. The white ones. The chalky
the
ones.
The dry ones.
The dry ones.
The dry
Thank
ones.
You, Karen. Yeah. The dry ones.
You're welcome.
Shirts.
Yeah.
Tylenol, it says.
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yeah. With 4 Y's and a question mark. Just how they like it. Just like the expression. Tylenol. That was what they said in the 40s.
But we made it a different perspective that the fucking guy kept admitting to it and he didn't do it. Like the guy who they thought did it.
Yeah, crazy guy. Yeah.
It's some guy out there who's still out there. That guy's still out there.
He's like
staring at Excedrin.
It's the Unabomber, dude.
Like he's ready to go. That
it's
guy.
The fucking Unabomber.
You think it's a Unabomber?
100%. Yeah.
It could totally be the Unabomber.
It's fucking the Unabomber. I promise you. Koresh, right?
Yes. Nope. Not Koresh.
<It's the Unabomber. laughs>
Koresh is dead.
100% the Unabomber, correct?
Correct.
That is why I love you.
The fucking
the Unabomber, Ted Bundy.
None of you are here for fucking facts. Don't fucking come at me. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm embarrassed.
So
sorry, I interrupted you anyway.
Koresh didn't make it. He burned up in a house with some people.
Yes, he's an angel. I believe in
Kaczynski.
Him. Kaczynski. Same That's thing.
Right. And don't people also think of that he is the San Francisco Zodiac?
Zodiac?
Do That's they think stupid.
That doesn't make
That's stupid.
Sense.
Right. It's Ted Cruz.
All we're right. going to solve it all tonight.
Yeah, it's really, we're knocking a lot down.
Sorry, Dave, tell yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Karen knows what mine is. I should have brought it up. Should have had it on my iPad. Ken McIlroy. Nope, that's not right. No, it is. It's McIlroy. I didn't even notice that when I was writing it. McElroy. McIlroy, right?
We're all on drugs.
His fucking name is killing it.
Should have seen that coming.
Yeah.
He's born in 1934. He was the 15th of 16 children.
What? So, is he a rabbit?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Listen.
Yeah. It was just like how caviar is birthed. Run! Be free, children! All of you, now!
Oh my God, that is just like the baby comes out and he's like, let's do it again.
Yeah. Do you even like know your parents if you're the 15th or 16th?
No, no, just like, no your eldest brother's like, I'm called dad. So
that's a broken pussy if I've ever fucking. Yeah. It's from a show. It's from a show. It's not me being gross.
Total BP. I BP. Hear you. They lived in a 4-bedroom house. So let's do some math.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's not great.
32 people to a room?
That's exactly right, Karen. Your math is exactly right.
He never learned to read well. He never really had a great job. He quit school in the 5th grade.
I wonder why he never got a good job.
I don't know.
Are there any facts about that?
I don't know. They lived outside of Skidmore, Missouri, a town of about 450 people. Has two paved streets.
They were all of them. It's our town.
Two paved streets, no traffic lights, one small mom and pop store, a gas station cafe. That's it. That's the whole deal. So he started stealing animals.
Sure.
He started stealing animals.
No.
Sure, sure.
Before he was 18 years old, he bought an old sedan and he took the back seat out and he put plywood down.
Oh.
And then he'd drive around at night and steal pigs.
Oh, all right.
I mean,
okay. Well, he had a plan.
It's Missouri. You know, it's classic Missouri.
For some reason, it's like,
plywood.
When you picture like dogs or cats, it's like, oh, God. And it's like, he stole pigs. And it's like, this is funny. I like this story.
Well, he would sell them. He would steal them and sell them to someone who wanted to buy pigs.
That's better than killing pigs. I mean,
oh yeah, no, he wasn't taking them out and killing them. He was like,
"We
want to buy them."
Eventually, kill them. Now,
well, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, people are eating these pigs at the end, the story's not great for the pigs.
Wait, they don't just want to feed them peppermints and put that on YouTube?
Have you
I'm
seen
not
this?
Sure you've ever been to a farm. but that's a great farm if they ever have one, that one.
How are my pigs doing? They're all very sick from the peppermint, actually. Across the board.
They're sad. Their eyes are burning.
I'll be honest, they're not. Two are dead. They're not doing well. They should not have ingested all that. What are you feeding them? Peppermint.
That's why my bacon sucks.
Oh, that's bacon.
Or is great. So he married for the first time at the age of 18. She was 16. Mm-hmm. They moved briefly to Denver, but he couldn't keep a job there, so he and his wife moved back. He started hanging out with, quote, coon hunting buddies.
I'm sorry.
Raccoons. Yeah. You guys earlier were talking about raccoons.
Yeah.
You were making this sound cute. They are horrible monsters.
No, oh, that's not fair.
What?
That
that's
come
not
into
fair.
My backyard and
that's
do this.
Fair. That's not fair.
So I don't know what raccoon
they tell
you're...
stories about you. Oh, this asshole. He's like,
You know, they do that about you.
Actually, can I tell a true story?
Yeah.
Sure. One time I heard a noise at my back door in the middle of the night. I was scared shitless, but I had to go see. This was before I got a dog. And I had to go see by myself. And so it was like a weird tapping sound. And so I go over and I turn on the porch light in the back. And there was a raccoon that was trying to get through the like built-in cat door.
Fuck that.
Yeah. Like with his little raccoon hands.
Yes.
And when I flicked on the light, he kind of like sat up and looked at me. And then we were just staring at each other.
Yeah, that's what
so
they do.
I kicked the door, right? Like he's leaned over like this, you know, kind of trying to tap on the thing. And then I kicked the door thinking he's going to run away. And instead he goes, and just kind of like stood up and paused at me.
Did he do this?
And that's her dog, Frank. Now
he fucking.
Okay, so I'm in my.
It's not worth the act out at all.
I'm in
sorry.
My backyard. I'm gonna do an act out. I'm in my backyard.
Do it.
And I hear all this noise, and I'm like, well, there's raccoons getting in the dog or cat's food, one or the other. And so I go out there and I grab a bat because I know raccoons are terrifying.
Oh,
I'm not like her where I'm like, hi, raccoon. I have a bat.
To be fair.
And I come out and there's a raccoon and it comes out and it's like this in front of me. And I'm like, what are you doing? I tap the bat on the ground and it's like, what?
His stance got wider.
Yeah, he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
He had a bat too.
And I'm like, and I'm like, you're supposed to be scared. And he's like, I'm not scared.
You're doing his voice or he's
spoke. And so I'm doing that. I'm like, get out of here, you fucker. And then he's standing there and he's making himself big. And then his four buddies go trucking by.
Oh, shit.
Like he was like the distraction guy.
They were
so his pals could run off.
Oh, terrifying.
He's like when there's the midnight bicycle riders and one of them stops in the middle of the fucking intersection. And they're like, fuck you. And then like a bunch of them right
by. Get by.
Go, go, go.
All of you. You fucking fix gear, motherfuckers.
Midnight ride. Okay. So
raccoons, am I right?
Like we got
this derailed quickly.
So he goes out hunting with his buddies and they shoot raccoons.
Aww.
And I assume they eat them. What else would you do with them?
Make a
delightful
hat.
Raccoon.
Mm-hmm. Make a hat.
But mostly what he did at night was steal cattle, horses, and hogs. He now had a horse trailer that he used to move stolen animals. And in this part of Missouri, they didn't really brand animals, so it was super easy for him to steal. He was also very skilled at harassing witnesses.
Oh.
He had an attorney who he would retain for $5,000 per felony who would keep him out of jail. And this was not a problem because he had a lot of money. He was always living large. He had a big roll of cash in his truck.
What?
Driving a new
pigs? Was it pig money?
He's stealing pigs and cattle and horses and selling them to other people.
No. So he had that fuck you pig money.
Like the 450 people in his fucking town were like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Nobody was like,
how?
Wait a minute.
How?
Yeah. And also someone was like, I'm going to marry him. Like, what the hell is wrong with him?
He's got it all. A van with pigs. Swoon.
One time a farmer caught him stealing two horses.
Tortoises.
two tortoises. What you do with my tortoises, boy?
They ran into my car.
I haven't milked them yet.
Ran.
So.
Well, we can move.
So the farmer reported it to the cops and said, this guy stole my horses and filed charges. Uh-huh. And McElroy visited the farmer the next day with a rifle and hit him in the face with the butt of the gun.
Ouch. Mm.
And then the farmer dropped the charges. He was like, that's fair. Yeah.
I see your point.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're fine.
I'm on your side now.
When McElroy was 20, he had a child with a woman who is not his wife. At the same time, he was dating a 15-year-old girl.
Okay. What the fuck? Like, this guy gets so many fucking chicks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's a very hot prospect in town. Well, he's got the pig car.
Yeah, he smells like pig. I mean, come on.
Fair enough.
This girl was named Sharon, and they had a complicated and messy relationship. And one day they were arguing, and he shot her in the neck with a shotgun. Because, oh my God, I don't know if you've ever dated a 15-year-old.
What's that?
They sass you.
It's hard.
Real sass. Yeah.
It's
We're
hard.
Not okaying domestic violence. This is not okay. Don't fucking marry pig stealers.
Yeah. You know what I'm
saying? No, it's not. I'm not saying it's
No, it's a super big warning sign if someone's a pig stealer.
Red yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Go on.
She did not die, but she did have scars, because that'll happen.
She was okay?
Yeah, she lived after getting shot in the neck with a shotgun.
Well, she was hella mad.
Yeah, I mean, she had a fear of guns after it, some irrational fear.
And she felt like dating someone else
after
that.
After that. Nope, she forgave him.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
And he divorced his first wife and married her.
Listen, if a girl can take a fucking bullet, she can take me.
You know what I mean?
They had two kids.
Wow.
That's quite a turnaround.
You know what? Love is fucking awesome.
Stupid.
It's crazy. Yes.
Then around 1961, McElroy started dating a 13-year-old girl named Sally.
What's going on?
What? He's just...
Like, you've, like, slowly inched it back creepier and creepier. It started and it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And then now we're...
He might just be walking down the hallway at a junior high. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just lazy.
You.
Hey, you.
They'll meet you out by the jungle gym. So he's 27 at this point.
Yeah, 27-year-olds are fucking disgusting. We all know that.
Also, at this point, he's living with his parents.
Oh, my Jesus, this guy. At their
dream date.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You live with your parents, smell like pigs, and shoot girls? You're still available? Oh, you're not. I'm still in.
Yeah, so they have a farmhouse. So he moved Sally in with his parents and his wife, Sharon. So it's his girlfriend and his wife and his parents and their kids.
What?
He liked sex.
He was the 15th of 16.
So Sally.
Very common for that birth order.
Oh, you know how the 15th is.
I'm the 15th. I do this crazy shit.
I'm acting out.
So Sally had three kids, and Sharon had two more.
Oh, honey.
McElroy then met and started seeing another underage girl named Alice.
What? No.
In 1964.
Seriously.
She was 12.
Oh, no.
Shut up.
What?
Shut up.
I wish the story would end that all the ladies fucking murdered him and moved to New York City and then, like, became,
Rockettes.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. This is the story of the Rockettes.
But it doesn't.
That's how the Rockettes began.
And then he met a young woman named Marcia.
She was nine.
She was now living there. So it's Marcia and Alice are living in his parents' house with the six kids. And then he met 12-year-old...
A lot of Brady Bunch commonalities right there.
Then he met 12-year-old Trina.
Jan.
Who was an eighth grader, and he seduced her.
No, he didn't. Yeah. He gave her candy that's not seduction, dude.
Well, that's a very good point.
It's not seduction.
It's not seduction?
No. It's not like he fucking put these sexy moves. He was just like, I am a man,
you're a girl. That's what seduction is.
Yeah.
This is my pig.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a pig? And then you're in your sedan on the wood floor. He's 37, by the way.
Oh.
Ew.
At this point.
But he looks great.
He looks fucking awesome. His abs are crazy. So to have Trina moved in, he kicks out Marcia. He's like, you're old. Oh, you're like 13. So then Trina moves in, drops out of school in the ninth grade, and is pregnant by the time she's 14. But as awesome as this sounds, things weren't going that well because just 16 days after the birth, Alice took off to her parents' house. The escape lasted just hours because McElroy came to the home with a gun and forced the girls to come back with him. Alice, her other friend, who's there now? Whatever. The other one also went with her.
Maureen?
Maureen.
Was it
let's
Maureen?
Call her Maureen.
It was Maureen.
Maureen goes back also.
Brought in for sweeps, Maureen.
So then he brings them back and he beats them both.
Oh, good.
And made them.
You mean seduces?
Yes. and made them have sex with him, and then, which I believe is called rape.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
And then when he was done, he brought Trina back to her parents' house and shot the family dog.
No, right. You can't do that here.
Yeah. And then poured gas all around the house and burned it down.
Jesus.
So he is en fuego. Like, he's just fucking, as far as being horrible, he's killing it.
Yeah, he's doing very well.
Oh, man. God, like, just fucking chill out, dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, he's so...
Just chill
it's
out.
It's not a solution, Georgia.
No, it is.
It won't work.
Yeah. I'm not sure. If someone had walked in and gone, dude, chill. We don't know what would have happened.
We don't. We know.
A couple of days later, Trina went to a doctor because, you know, she had been beaten. And he was like, you look like you've been beaten. And
you're very good.
Is this doctor from the city?
Yeah.
He really knows his stuff.
Boy, your degrees are real, huh? You put the nail on the head, doc.
He slowly got the story of the beating out of her and the dog shooting and the arson. And the doctor...
He must have just been like, at the end, like, all right, every detail, give me all... Get them all out now.
And 6 hours later, really? So the doctor contacts the social welfare agency who put Trina and her baby into foster care because she was a child. And then the case was taken to the district attorney. And on the basis of Trina's testimony... McElroy is indicted for arson, assault, and rape. But it was not looking good. He was represented by defense attorney Richard Gene McFadden, who said McElroy was his favorite client because he always paid cash and he always came back.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Get your shit another. What the fuck is wrong with you, dude? Like, just
that's
walking
the
there
worst.
Around.
Yeah. Hey, you're back. Who'd you kill?
All right.
What'd you shoot, a pig or a person? What'd you do?
A person dog house. All right.
Woo. Trifecta.
All right.
I'm going to buy a houseboat.
Yeah. Time for me to live on a boat.
But even with his $5,000 per felony charge, the attorney told him it would be difficult for him to be acquitted. But McElroy would not give up. He found the foster home where Trina was living and began making threatening phone calls. He would sit out in front of the foster home for hours and hours, sometimes shooting a gun into the air.
What?
He then called the foster
this guy's
family.
A fucking nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cartoon. Yeah. Like, it sounds like a cartoon.
What about this isn't working?
Did I not tell you this was Yosemite Sam?
Oh, Yosemite Sam origin story.
Then he called the foster family and said he would trade, quote, girl for girl to get his child back. By this he meant he knew where the foster family's biological daughter went to school and what bus she rode. So that didn't go well. And the district attorney then hit him with 8 more felony child molestation charges as a result of his sexual activity with Trina. The attorney kept using delay tactics, and after a while, Trina decided to go back to McElroy.
I can't go through this again with you, Dave.
He then arranged to divorce his second wife, Sharon, from whom he'd been separated for years, and marry Trina. To get Trina's parents to agree, he threatened to kill the mother, and the mother was like, okay, you can marry my daughter.
We like him.
That's sweet. It's romantic.
Yeah.
I mean, like, oh my God.
So this solved all his legal problems because being his wife, Trina could not be compelled to testify against him.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She also signed a statement saying she had lied about everything, and McElroy beat the charges.
And her.
His wife.
And her. In 1976, he shot a neighbor farmer in the face and stomach.
What?
The gun was loaded with birdshot. The lawyer also delayed it as long as possible while McElroy intimidated the farmer, driving by his house, shining a spotlight into his windows at night, destroying his tractors, and shooting guns into the air. The farmer said McElroy parked outside his home at least 100 times and would just sit there. At the trial, two of his raccoon hunting buddies said they were with him the day of the shooting, and McElroy got off again. The pattern of committing crimes, then intimidating witnesses, went on for 4 years. Then, in 1980, two of his daughters went into a town store. So he's got two daughters. So one's like a teenager and the other's five.
And he marries one of them. Both of them.
It just can't get worse.
So the older girl buys something, and then as they walk out, the five-year-old girl grabs a couple little pieces of candy.
Sure.
Uh-oh. I did that. Yeah.
And the clerk was like, hey, put that shit back. And then the girl was like, and threw it back and was mad, which is cool for a five-year-old. And then a couple hours later, McElroy and Trina showed up, and McElroy was just kicking it with a knife. And Trina and the owner argued about how he had treated the daughter. And then the couple said, well, you're banned from our store. You can never come back. So McElroy started harassing the owners. And then after a couple months, he pulled up in the back of the store and shot the husband owner in the neck with a shotgun.
Really?
And he lived.
Everybody in the neck is shooting.
This whole city is filled with people with the most powerful necks.
Yes. Titanium necks.
Yes. What is it? The water or like...
That they...
Their necks are bulletproof.
It's so strange, but...
Like, cool.
Now, McElroy was arrested again, and then he started harassing the store owners.
And he calmed the fuck down, man.
He needs to stop harassing and shooting in the neck.
Yeah.
And the air.
Enough.
And marrying children. There's a lot of things for him to knock off.
Dude's got a thing. Like, it's his thing.
We hate his thing.
Well...
We're being very clear.
I mean, take it up with Pepsi, because they were sponsoring him.
For doing all this?
Yeah.
Oh.
He had like four sponsors.
Was this like, what's the extreme sports thing when you can skateboard?
He's like X Games?
X Games.
Yeah. Hey, like
he did it all on a little bike.
OG X Games.
So he starts harassing the store owners, and then when he heard that the town minister had gone to visit the store owner in the hospital because of his neck wound, he's... turned his wrath on the minister and told the minister he was going to castrate him and cut his son to pieces in front of him.
Ugh.
Chill.
So the minister started carrying a gun. This is a good town.
Get it.
I like that just because the minister went and visited him, he's like, well, I'm going to cut your kid up if you're...
Oh.
He's like, it's my job.
I go and I see people that are hurt.
God bless me.
I'm cutting your balls off.
I'm not laughing at that.
So his lawyer's whole thing was delay tactics. So he starts with the delay tactics again. He keeps delaying the trial. Meanwhile, McElroy would sit in the local bar and talk loudly about how he was going to kill the store owner. But it didn't work.
The bar was empty and it was like three people and he was talking loudly in it. Like,
I can hear you. I'm going to kill him.
Fuck up, dude.
Sorry. Sick of that guy, right? Someone should shoot him in the neck.
Okay, I will.
So, it didn't work. There was a trial, and McElroy was convicted of second-degree assault and sentenced to 2 years in prison.
But,
yeah. It being Missouri, he was allowed to stay free while he appealed.
Aww.
Okay.
That's nice.
4 days later, he was back in the local bar. Hey, how'd your conviction go? Oh, it was all right.
Guilty.
Guilty. Totally fucking guilty. Yeah. Here I am drinking a beer.
Yeah.
And then Trina came in and handed him a large gun. He said he was going to kill the store owner, but having a gun was a violation of his parole, so he was charged. On the day of his hearing for his parole violation, the entire town decided they had had enough.
Yeah, I like the sound of this.
After 20 years of him fucking all their daughters.
That's it. This
very
is
familiar.
The thing.
You know what? When you broke your probation, bro.
Did the whole town show up in little pink hats and fucking march?
Yeah.
Was it one of those kind of things?
Yeah.
Echoes.
Yeah.
But when they got to the courthouse, they found out the lawyer had gotten it postponed for 10 days. Now they were pissed. And they finally decided they needed to do something. And they all went to the American Legion. I love that in this little town, they do have an American Legion.
You have to.
Great bar there, I bet.
That and the Sam's Club.
So they have a town meeting, and they call the sheriff and ask the sheriff to come by. The sheriff comes by, and they tell him what's going on, and the sheriff told them that they should just start a neighborhood watch group.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So he's not very helpful.
Meet Agent McGruff. He's going to help you with this case. Find him very useful. Uh-huh.
So there's a guy who's been fucking your daughters and shooting you in the neck. You need like a watch group.
Have you guys made any kind of a phone tree or anything? Called each other?
You guys
regularly?
Pamphleting? What's your deal?
He told them not to confront McElroy. And then the sheriff just left.
Goodbye. They all had titanium necks.
Yes, so at this point they all have
confront that motherfucker.
Metal neck guards. Right then, Trina and McElroy show up and went to the bar for a drink. When the townspeople heard this, they all decided to go have a beer. Trina was said to be very intimidated by all of the townspeople standing around. While McElroy coolly finished his beer, went up and bought a six-pack, and then went outside. Outside, there were three or four guys, and they got their rifles out of their trucks.
Yeah.
And then the entire crowd came out of the bar and followed him to his truck, and it was said there were at the very least 35 people, but probably more like 60, all standing there. And Trina and McElroy then got inside the truck, and he coolly lit a cigarette.
Oh, fuck.
And then Trina looked across the street and saw a man aiming a rifle, and she yelled, "They've got a gun." And then they shot at him from more than one direction. McElroy was hit once in the head and once in the neck. And the shot...
The head wound. It was the head wound.
You gotta shoot in the neck in this town. Yeah. You got to.
Legally.
Welcome to Neckville, motherfucker. many other shots at the truck. All the shots came from different guns. And McElroy died instantly.
From the gunshots. Right.
No.
Yeah.
From sadness.
Oh, depression got him.
About
suicide.
About suicide. It looks like he did it to himself. About
carbon monoxide got in.
About 45 minutes later, they called an ambulance.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that.
That's sarcastic, actually. Yeah.
Unfortunately, no one saw the shooter.
A lot was going on.
Except Trina, who identified him. She was in the truck, you know, and she saw him. But the DA declined to press charges because everyone was like,
because he was there, too. Yeah.
He was the guy hitting him with the iron pan on the head. The FBI came in to investigate, but they also could not press any charges because everyone in the town was like, I don't know. He left behind 10 children, 10 Jeez. Wonderful children, Zass. and a few wives. After his death, cattle and hog wrestling in the county dropped significantly. In 1984, Trina filed a $6 million lawsuit against the town and the sheriff and the mayor and the guy who had shot him across the street. The case was settled out of court for $17,000.
Oh.
That's good
lawyering.
That's
what we're making tonight.
So she bought a Yaris?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Fully owns. Fully owns a Yaris.
Outright.
So that's my favorite murder.
That's pretty good. But God.
Yeah. He was a fucking monster, and they killed him. That was 1981, and they killed him, and everyone was like,
I love it.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
We'll get there again.
We're on our way. Let's kill an
orangutan. Gareth?
Okay, great. I'll go.
Nice, Dave. That was good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I can't. The last time I came on, I wrote a story about a guy from my hometown who killed women, and I can't do those stories because I feel weird as a guy reading
stories. Well, you're sexist.
Well, to that point, I'll get into mine.
This is about men killing women, right?
It's the same story as yours. What are the odds?
Just a different interpretation.
Yeah,
a
totally different take. I do it from the pig angle. So this will be fun.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So ripe for murders. We have Ed Gein, Skin Ottomans, Dahmer, obvious choice.
Skin Ottomans?
Yeah.
Did he make actual ottomans?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the whole collection.
He made a nipple belt.
Yeah, he made a nipple belt.
He took CB2?
I might have taken some creative liberties. As we all know, Stephen Avery. So this is another story. This is about the Northside Strangler, who is actually, this is some more good detective work. So in October 10th and 11th, 1986, two sex workers, Deborah Harris, Tanya Miller, were both strangled one day apart. Both bodies found in vacant apartments. Since they were both strangled, sex workers, found in empty apartments, day apart, cops thought there might be a link. So it shows you they're pretty good there.
That's surprising.
Yeah,
sure.
They're not stupid. however, this was before they were collecting DNA, or DNA was shaky, so the murders went unsolved. So then June 20th, 1987, Joyce Ann Mims was found strangled in a vacant apartment by some construction workers in Milwaukee's North Side. She was also believed to be a sex worker, had no criminal record, but George Mule Jones.
You mean George the Mule?
George the Mule Jones.
Okay. Now, is this a nickname? Does he have a big hog? Is he...
Well...
Is this a family name?
I have a theory, but we'll get there.
Okay.
You probably know. You know him?
No.
Okay.
Yes, we went to high school together.
Yeah. He's at the Improv a lot. Wait. George Mule Jones?
Wait, he's so funny.
He's great. Rides it on a horse.
He's one dynamite. Of my favorite stand-ups.
So they charged George Mule Jones with the murder because he was friends with Mims from Cleveland, and they were still friends with Mims and his girlfriend, who was simply known as Sugar Baby.
Oh. Why not Mims? That's the coolest fucking name
Mims is pretty good. Yeah.
Well, they're different. Mims was killed.
No.
Okay, no, they are the same, and she should have been called Sugar Baby. I couldn't agree more, Georgia. Jones had a criminal record because he was actually convicted of murder in Mississippi.
That doesn't mean anything.
You aren't lying. He stabbed a woman and was sentenced to 5 years.
That's a year of stab time, I think.
Yeah.
For your first murder.
Yeah, a year of stab, I think, is what
they do
there.
Like, your first murder should be, like, three.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you do it again, well, then, all right.
No, you're seriously going to piss Georgia off, and then it's going to get fucking ugly up here.
I'm going to cry, and I'm going to flip this fucking table.
No, but it'll be fine. I mean, it's fine.
Well, let me get my beers glasses, and my iPad.
Okay. the woman that he killed was named Shamika Carter. She was killed because she made fun of George Mule Jones' inability to perform sexually.
That happens a lot with murderers, right? Isn't that one of their things?
They can't
get it up and then they kill?
Yeah.
That's
Well, that's...
If I can't get it up, I just walk away.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Could you tell your friends?
Shamefully, I'm like, I'm going to watch Law & Order. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as murder's involved in some way.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch a murder be committed instead of committing my own.
And then I'll be back.
And then I'll be back with ideas. I might cut your buttocks. And a new soundtrack. Okay, so yeah, so he went down for that killing. So then police thought, but there's still killings going on. Oh, and they in his apartment they found a black ski mask and 9 women's shoes in his.
I have that too in my house, though.
Wait, yeah. To be fair. 9 women's shoe and a ski mask.
Yeah,
that's actually all I have in my house.
Yeah, 9 is a weird number.
It is
weird
for shoes.
Well,
yeah.
There's a unless there was a lady with just one leg.
Pairs, not in my
pairs
notes.
Of shoes.
Yeah.
So he goes down for these murders.
He goes down for this murder in particular.
Just one.
Yes, this one. Right?
But there's been 3 murders so far.
This is the 3rd murder.
Okay.
Yes. There's more to come.
Oh.
Yeah.
We see your papers in your hand.
Yeah,
okay. I'm moving fast.
In my story, the bad guy dies.
Okay, Dave. We were there. So the idea of a serial killer was floated out by Bill Vogel, who is the homicide unit in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He told the police, his chief, that he thought both women that were killed the year before were done by the same man. He entered with a business-like attitude, to, quote, to discuss the matter, and I used the word serial, and I got reamed out, said Vogel.
Get out of here, Vogel, you son of a bitch! I don't want to hear the word serial again!
I hate
that podcast. I don't care if you're talking about Cheerios!
Season 2 sucks.
No?
I love that fuck. Oh.
Steven, cut that out. That never
Steven.
Happened.
And bolt the doors. You will all unremember. Known as forgetting.
Can we get the steam, whatever the fuck?
Gas. Yeah,
are you talking about flash pots?
Gas, steam.
Okay, oh, we're gonna knock these people out?
You're damn right we are. Like the Joker and Batman. His chief was like, hey man, we don't want people freaking out with the word cereal. Let's just shut up about that. And so
okay, that's the best way to handle a possible
smart.
Serial killer.
That's smart.
Right. Let's act like it's not happening.
Strangulations kept happening.
Mm-hmm.
In 1992, Irene Smith, 25, was found dead. In 1932, we're going back. He was a time jumper. I should point that out. Time had no meaning in this one. The year was 1804 he went to. Started a new life of murder, and he did.
He then killed a dinosaur.
Oh, he sure did. So, basically, like, more people are dying, more sex workers.
How many more are there?
We're right now at about 5. Karen D. Kilpatrick, 32, was killed in 1994. Irene Smith, 25, was also 1994. Both women were strangled. Both were sex workers. Police still had no way of connecting these crimes, but there was a homicide detective named Steve Spagnola, who was set on finding the person. And in 1995, April 24th, Florence McCormick's body was found in a shitty basement on Locust Street.
It sounds like he's killing ladies whose names start with Mick.
I don't think that tracks in my stuff.
You just fucking solved this case.
I'm putting
Dave
shit
Anthony.
Together. The Scottish killer.
Wait, he's Scottish too?
I don't know.
I'm
fucking throwing out theories. Let's put shit on the board.
Sure. Is there a board? I'm not sure. McCormick's body was found. She was tied up on a sink. Her hair was neat. Fingernails suggested no struggle. Her socks were clean, which I'm not sure what that means, but that was pointed out.
How did her socks were clean.
Well, like she wasn't walking around outside or something?
I guess. Yeah, they make it sound like that is like how they know she was murdered, but...
Vogel's over there in the corner just smelling her socks. These are good.
Vogel?
I have never worn clean socks in my life.
That's what I was thinking.
What does that
mean? If someone buys me the clean socks, something's fucking wrong.
But like that means
you
that
know what I mean?
When we die, people will be like, it's a murder! Their socks are filthy!
No.
Which is just going to mean that I was wearing socks.
What does a filthy sock mean?
I don't know. Look, that's for you guys. That's for you guys. I'm merely a shepherd of this.
Oh, by the way, there's some take-home stuff.
Yo, yeah.
It's under your seats.
All right.
Okay, so Spagnola didn't think that there was no sexual activity. There was no semen on the body. There was no semen around the body, which he thought was possible because sometimes the killer may masturbate near the body, which happens because guys are just normal things. And that's a normal thing to do.
Yeah,
her body was posed. It was bound.
But they thought there was some level of comfortability between the two because it seemed like there was little struggle for this. So they thought that, like, he was like, hey, you know, let me bind you and we'll
kill
kinky
you.
And no, I don't think he threw that part out there.
No.
Maybe a tell. 1995, 2 months after the murder of McCormick, Sheila Farrier was discovered 6 blocks away in Titonia.
God.
Also a sex worker, also in an empty apartment, this time strangled by her own brassiere. Posed, crack pipes, crack cleaner, pipe cleaners, just a lot of crack, a good scene.
So it's a crack house.
It's an empty apartment where crack was smoked.
But pipe cleaners, like for crafts?
For crack.
For crack.
Not crack. Not, no one's doing crafts.
People are doing crack, which can lead to crafts, but I don't believe that that was the direct implication, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at this point, there's like...
There were vision boards everywhere. I'm glad we could do this.
At this point, there's like 7 dead women all found in abandoned apartments, and they're like strangled, and they're like, I don't see a connection.
Cops are like, man, something's going on, huh? You hungry? Just get lunch.
You know what? I would say this was the same killer, but the socks are different.
Yeah. Look at these socks are filthy. Then they actually finally got a DNA sample. They didn't really know for who, but on August 30th, 1995, there was the body of a 16-year-old runaway named Jessica Payne, who was found with her throat slit. How was she found? It's a really cool story. A real meet cute. What happened was on August 30th, the two young boys went to an abandoned mattress that they normally used as a makeshift trampoline.
Normal.
However, a normal just kid that's stuff.
That's just boys jumping.
Go find a
you
mattress.
You gotta play with garbage.
Yeah, go feel.
As a kid?
Yeah. Jump on a little refuse, yeah. You scamps. But this day they weren't getting a bunch of bounce like normal. And the reason was because Jessica Payne's body was underneath it.
No.
As I said, this time there was appearance of sexual activity.
Boys are fine now.
The boys are fine.
Yeah.
They don't sleep in mattresses.
I will sleep on the floor tonight.
You gonna sleep standing up again, Kyle?
Yeah, I think so. I sleep better standing up, Dad.
I can only sleep if you lay under the mattress.
Yeah.
So there was semen present. They had some DNA. They still couldn't connect it to anybody, but they thought that this might be related. A guy named Richard Gwynn was in jail. He started implicating himself in 2 others. This guy Sam Hadaway, Chot Oat, sure. Gwynn told police he was driving. He was in the car with Hadaway, Ott, and Jessica Payne. He parked in front of an abandoned residence where they remained in his vehicle, conversing, listening to the radio, drinking alcohol, and smoking marijuana. Just fun car games. And Gwynn said at some point, Hadaway, Ott, and Payne exited the vehicle, walked to an alley, and then Hadaway returned to the car, followed by Ott 5 minutes later. When Gwynn asked about Payne's whereabouts, Hadaway said that they had to rob Payne, but her pockets were empty, so Ott just cut her throat.
That happens. That's a good thing.
Hadaway confirmed Gwynn's story, providing further detail about the murder and that Ott cut Payne's throat. Hadaway described a situation, and when he searched for her pockets, he found nothing, so he pushed her down on the mattress, pulled down her pants, and tried to force her way in. But Hadaway said he didn't actually see that because he turned away, but when he turned back around, he heard choking and gagging to see that Payne's throat was cut and that blood was gushing out. Yes. David?
What the? I don't know.
Oh, okay. You're just reacting like a human. I get it.
Fucking.
As you should.
Just bumming. You know, that's what we do.
Just bumming.
Just bumming out.
My guy died. But,
So, 1995, the police found a search warrant for Ott's home. They found 2 box cutters and a knife among his possession. That was really all the evidence that they had, but Ott was sentenced to life in prison with parole available in 50 years. The main evidence in the trial was the 2 box cutters. The police...
But that sounds nothing like the other ones.
Weird, what? Right?
Scared.
So, DNA evidence started being used in 1990. Wisconsin fully came around to 2015 to really collecting DNA from every
criminal. What?
1990 is where most places started collecting database of violent criminals. Wisconsin's finished it in 2015.
So just a mere 25 years.
Yes, just a mere difference. Is that an issue for you?
Yeah.
It's for a lot of us, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So, Now the police felt that they had DNA that they had found at that scene. So that they now had DNA from a number of women. They had DNA from the woman in 1986, two in 95, one in 97, and the latest, there were no more murders until April 27th, 2007.
Okay.
When Quithrine Stokes, 28, was found strangled by city inspectors after they were going to inspect a vacant boarded up residence. They found DNA at this scene, and now police had the DNA from the two women in 86, 97, all that, 2007, and it all matched to one person. But the police couldn't figure out who it was. Since the DNA matched nothing in their databases, they knew they were dealing with someone that had never been convicted of a violent crime before, which is curious. So, two detectives of the Milwaukee Department Homicide Unit re-examined the DNA linked to the suspect, and they believe they found him. So on September 7th, 2009, Walter E. Ellis of Milwaukee was arrested at noon at a hotel by a swarm of police officers. Ellis was booked on a temporary felony warrant, was being questioned by the police. They took a DNA sample from his place off his toothbrush, and they had a match. He was matched, he was even matched for the two murders that men were already serving sentences for.
Oops. Ooh.
So.
Awkward.
Here's what's crazy awkward.
Not good.
They should have had his DNA because it wasn't from a lack of opportunities. He was convicted of a shitload of crimes. 1978, felony burglary. 79, drug charges. 80, robbery. 81, controlled substance. 81, again, possession with intent to distribute. 85, soliciting and beating up two sex workers. 87, retail theft. 92, release for good behavior. 92, back in for violating that good behavior. 94, stabbing his girlfriend with a screwdriver.
Been there.
Not the drink. 95, battery for choking his girlfriend. 97, resisting arrest. 98, reckless injury. So he had a track record.
But hold on, when would they have gotten any DNA?
Well, because they collected, they still collected DNA. They just didn't collect it from every violent criminal. Are you having fun with me?
Yep.
You bastard.
I am.
So, the DNA was never asked for. But in 2001, police discovered that they actually had gotten his DNA.
What?
Or at least they had at one point. There was an issue. His DNA matched nothing in their system. And they know that one of two things happened. A, Ellis convinced his cellmate to submit the DNA for him.
Come on.
Or B, it was lost in transfer to the Oshkosh Police Department, who said they never received it.
Guess wait a second. Is Oshkosh where Stephen Avery...
Yep.
Oh.
Is that also where they make the overalls?
Yes. It's famous for two things now, which is cool.
Okay.
I'm
not sure which is a bigger crime.
That same police department.
Same police department.
This is the same fucking police department.
Well, it's the same. It's like the same region. Very.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, they share a Walmart. It's real.
Fuck.
So had they done this in the 90s, like
you
most
mean,
places,
had they
would have stopped.
Work?
Yeah, they would have stopped 5 to 7 murders. They would have stopped one if they'd done it in 2001 when it was totally expected of them. So in 2008, an appeals court overturned Ott's conviction, the guy who they said cut the mattress murderer. They had a new trial with new DNA evidence. 2009, they announced they would not seek a new trial. Ott was freed. He served 13 years in prison for a murder he didn't commit. George Mule Jones died in prison April 30th, 2012, but it is not too sad because he was also a previous murderer. He just didn't do the one we talked about. Ellis was found...
Okay, good, good, good.
Am I doing good?
Yeah, yeah.
Ellis was found guilty of 7 murders in total, but he was thought to have been guilty of 9. He was sentenced to 7 life sentences in 2011, and here's the fucker.
He's out!
That's enough.
He died in 2013. So he served 2 years. These murders went from 1986 to 2007, and he was in for less than 2 years.
How old was he?
He was like in his 50s.
Tell me he died painfully, like he got shanked.
Hospital. He was in a hospital.
I want to point out that, though, even if they had had his DNA and put it through, they would have... Putting it through CODIS and actually checking that DNA, as we know that, like, from the rape kits that are not tested, that doesn't mean he would have been caught. It's not like, oh, they should have, if they had tested it and had his DNA, everything would have been fine. Like, that's not the fucking case. So it's not like, oh, man, you missed it.
They could have, you know, started testing.
Well, yeah, who knows what could have
crazy
happened.
Crazy 25 year window.
Well, he was also known as a fucking lunatic. Like,
everyone's like, how about this guy?
Everyone was like, he's crazy. He lives, he lives right around every one of these
murders. But let's not all assume that that these systems that they have in place to catch people are like the end all be all. Like, it takes a lot more than that. And so, like, it doesn't mean that these 7 women wouldn't have been killed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Sorry to be a bummer. But it's true.
Between 1986 and 2007, 42 prostitutes were killed in Milwaukee. Only 31% of those cases have been solved.
And they're great there.
Shit.
We're yeah. going, and we'll again. Be there in April. Yeah. See you yeah. guys there.
Again, mine wrapped up super nice.
I mean, well, first of all, it's always hard to go last.
Yeah.
It's always yes. hard to go last. Yeah. But then also, that was fucking rough.
Yeah, yeah. dude.
No, yes, great job.
Yes, thank you.
Great
That's the
job.
Noise, strangler.
That's fucked up.
How do you feel about it?
Terrible. I really am like so shocked at how little they give a fuck. When you really find out how it's like politics, but when you find out that they're really just worried about what people think over actually yeah. doing good, you're like, we're just fucked.
Well, that's something we run across in the dollop all the time.
Have we?
How much the FBI fucks up. Can I end with a, can I end with something? Just
Always.
A personal story?
Please.
So, my, uncle, I lived in California. I grew up in Marin County. A little bit better than Petaluma. But
I don't know if that.
But my uncle was a huge drug dealer.
That's way better than Petaluma.
Yeah.
And at one point, the law was like getting down on him, so he decided to move to Florida to get out of California because it was the local cops. And I went, and we went to this big, gone away party, and he opened up a suitcase that was full of just fucking cash. And I was like 12, and I was like, that's cool. And then he left. And then all of his friends, the people that I had met at parties at his house, about 10 of them showed up in trunks all around Marin County.
Dead body trunks?
One after the other.
Like chilling in, like.
John's dead in a trunk. Oh. Marty's dead in a trunk.
Shit.
Larry's dead in a trunk. Yeah, Larry all died. Of his friends got killed.
And you're saying that's the Larry. FBI?
Yes!
That's insane!
Oh, it wasn't the gang drug dealer members that they were hanging out with. It couldn't have been them.
Or natural causes and just a weird burial. Good Listen. Lord, there's theories, sir.
If you're going to take a nap in a trunk, it's yeah, on you.
That's dude. Right. It's suicide by suffocation.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that they lived in trunks.
That's a huge detail.
You guys, will you please help us thank Dave Anthony and Gareth Reynolds.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you.
We appreciate it
thank
so
you
much.
Guys
thank you all
so
for
much.
Coming here. This has been an amazing night. Hey, you guys, stay sexy.
And don't get murdered!
Don't get
Bye.